Chapter 69. Fader Kuchin had nothing, and because he had nothing, the man was growing increasingly frustrated. In 90-degree angles, he paced the 3,000-square-foot cabin, perched near an ocean whose water temperature never got much above 50 degrees, even in August. Kuchin's mood was tied directly to his underling's failure. Alan Rice had purchased access to a dozen databases, and yet there had not been one hit in any of the digital images made from his drawings or the photo. Every other avenue of investigation he'd pursued had ended with a similar lack of progress. Kuchin's large hands clenched and then loosened as his nimble mind galloped along, trying to envision some way to move forward. Finally, Kuchin drew on a parka and walked outside. He had taken with him a rifle and scope and some cartridges. It was summer, but one wouldn't know it by the weather. It wasn't cold enough to snow, but as he looked around, the terrain reminded him starkly of his birthplace in the Ukraine. Perhaps that's why he'd built a home here with nothing else around for miles. He had two guards with him, who stayed in another building 500 meters from his house. Yet there wasn't much danger out here. Other than the threat of being gored or trampled by a moose or a caribou, Kuchin felt fairly secure. He trudged over ground that brought back memories of a little boy trailing his burly father as he went off to work. Work was fishing on a commercial trawler in the Sea of Azov. 40,000 square kilometers in area, the Azov's deepest point was surprisingly less than 15 meters. It was, in fact, the shallowest sea in the world. Because of that, its waters were turned over quickly. This did not keep it fresh, however. When Kuchin was a child, the pollutants from factories and oil and gas exploration were already pouring into the sea's meager depths. By the 1970s, dead and mutated fish by the thousands were piling up on the shores, clearly victims of man-made toxins and radioactive poisons. To swim in the waters today would be suicidal. Yet all the children in Kuchin's village had spent their summers in waters whose temperatures would soar toward 30 degrees Celsius in July. In winter, the sea would be frozen solid for months, and the children would take their homemade skates and have races until their mothers would call out for them from shore to come eat their dinners. Kuchin could even remember lying face down on the ice and licking it with his 7-year-old tongue. Now Kuchin had heard that the Azov was in danger of becoming a dead sea, and that commercial fishing should be banned for 20 years. This was not as draconian as it sounded. For 40 years, fishing yields had been reduced to nearly zero, simply because all the sea life was dead. And yet he could recall vividly his father cleaning the fish he'd caught for their personal table with his big gutting knife, efficiently slicing up perch, sturgeon, and mackerel that his mother would then fry up in her big iron skillet with secret spices and ingredients that French women seemed to naturally possess. South of here was the Strait of Belle Isle, across from which was the region of Newfoundland. Kuchin had hiked there often and watched the cargo ships pass through the narrow channel. Indeed, some of his human cargo passed through these same waters. Before he reached adulthood, Kuchin's life had been inextricably tied to water, polluted water, as it turned out. He realized it was probably a miracle he was not dead from some horrible cancer rising from the shallow depths of the Azov. Yet there could be tumors right now growing in his body, wrapping silently but lethally around essential organs, crushing blood vessels, or invading his brain. However, despite the environmental dangers of his childhood, growing up there had provided him with an ambition to succeed that had been inexhaustible. Everything he'd ever set out to do, he'd achieved, which made this present situation unacceptable.